But today I want to talk to you a little bit about a global view of cotton germplasm resources. And as you can see from the title slide, this is a collaborative effort among many co-authors that are listed here, several from USDA ARS, my group in Florence, South Carolina, also Johnny Jenkins' group in Mississippi State. Of course, the College Station group with Richard Percy and Jim Frelikowski, and also several other countries are listed here that we're going to learn about as we go through this process. So where does this come from? I'm not responsible for curating a cotton germplasm collection, but as a breeder, I'm certainly interested in what germplasm resources are available. Well, I was fortunate enough to attend the International Cotton Genome Initiative meeting this past summer in China. And for those of you that don't know too much about International Genome Cotton Genome Initiative, it's better known as ICGI. It's an international organization that's made up of these five different subgroups that are listed down below. And its primary emphasis is to instill international collaboration in with regard to cotton scientists all around the world. So in this meeting, I have to give credit where credit is due. Dr. Richard Percy, I don't think he's in the audience. Yes, he is. He gave a nice presentation that kind of got the ball rolling in a lot of people's minds thinking about cotton germplasm resources at the ICGI meeting in China. So a lot of this talk, it really stems from what he initiated in China. But anyway, these work groups, I attend the germplasm and genetic stocks group, and we get together and we got together at the meeting in China and tried to talk about cotton germplasm resources and what the international community could do. So the framework for this group at this particular meeting and since this meeting is we need to communicate the importance of cotton germplasm or genetic resources to really facilitate international germplasm collaborations involving germplasm exploration, germplasm exchange, etc. So one of the ways this subgroup at the ICGI meeting thought it would be best to communicate the importance of these germplasm resources was to develop some type of global germplasm white paper, you might say, that really involves global participation from those that curate cotton germplasm resources around the world. So with that in mind, we decided to move forward on this with three major strategies involved. That was one, to identify major germplasm collections and their curators, develop a survey to gather information about each of these germplasm collections, and really compile and summarize the information at kind of a one-stop shop. So this presentation and this effort, we didn't go out with the priority to cover all of the cotton germplasm collections around the world, but we tried to make a focus on the major ones that we knew about around the world and that we knew that we had a good opportunity to gather information. And these are listed here. United States, of course, France, India, China, Uzbekistan, Brazil, and Australia. And so if we think about germplasm resources, we already know a lot about these. I took this slide from Kurt Brubaker, his chapter in the book Cotton, edited by Wayne Smith. And this kind of outlines what kind of germplasm resources are available. About 50 species, 45 of them diploid, with these various genomes from A to K, and also the tetraploid species, five, many of these species have already been talked about earlier today in various research projects, but they cover these geographic locations present on the slide. So in the next series of slides, I'm going to just give a brief snapshot of what each of these major collections contains. The ARS collection in College Station, there are a total of 9,388 total accessions that span 49 species. And the way that these are organized in the collection at College Station are according to these six subgroups that are listed on the screen. I hope all of you in the back may not be able to see that, but they're variety, primitive race, Cassipian barbadense, Asiatic, wild species, and genetic marker. At the same time, each accession out of these six groups is also maintained long-term storage at Fort Collins, Colorado, and this would also include new plant introductions coming from germplasm releases and such in the U.S. The French collection is curated by CIROD. And although there's no cotton produced in France, CIROD is active in tropical countries that produce tropical crops, and cotton falls into that arena. They maintain about 3,000 total accessions and represent 32 species. These materials are organized by species into subgroups of cultivated varieties and wild or ancestral types. And geographical origin of each species is also available. The India collection is maintained by the Central Institute for Cotton Research, and there are a little over 10,000 total accessions available that represent 30 species, two tetraploid and 28 diploid species. And these are held at three areas in India. I'm not going to attempt to pronounce all of those. You can read them for yourselves. But overall, the collection primarily consists of cultivated Hirsutum, Barbadense, Arboreum, and Herbaceum species. Also, there are race stocks available in this collection of some of the cultivated species. 26 wild species are maintained, and also 32 synthetic intergress derivatives are maintained. And I'm still trying to get the exact definition of what a synthetic intergress derivative actually is. The Chinese collection is held by the Cotton Research Institute, Chinese Academy of Agricultural Sciences. A little over 8,800 total accessions. They represent 45 species, Hirsutum, Barbadense, Herbaceum. They have several Hirsutum race materials, Arboreum, and 41 wild species. And in China, these are held at Beijing, Anyang, and Hainan Island. The Uzbekistan collection. There are two different collections actually in Uzbekistan. In all, they total about 17,000 total accessions, with 43 species represented. The core of the collection represents Hirsutum, Barbadense, Arboreum, and Herbaceum. They're also the primary collection. It consists of a little over 12,000 species, and they're held at the Ministry of Agriculture. And I think both of these collections are in Tashkent. There are also 6,500 landrace stocks and wild species at the Academy of Sciences. There are 500 unique genetic stocks at the University of Uzbekistan, and these represent various fiber and morphological mutants, recombinant inbred lines, and near isogenic lines. The Brazilian collection is maintained by Embrapa at Brasilia, Brazil, and there are a little over 4,300 total accessions, 31 species, 5 tetraploid, 26 diploid. They primarily consist of Hirsutum, Barbadense, and Mustelinum. And one thing unique about the Brazilian collection is there are several accessions of Moco cotton, which is native to Brazil. The Australian collection is held by two agencies within Australia, CSIRO and the Australian Tropical Grains Germplasm Center. The CIRO, the CSIRO collection contains 600 accessions that represent 32 species. Two of those are tetraploid and 30 diploid species. The additional collection consists of 1,080 total accessions that are represented by 28 species, 5 tetraploid and 23 diploid. So in terms of germplasm storage and conservation, I'd say most of the collections use short and long-term storage of seed. The short term consists of anywhere between 0 to 7 C with 20 to 50% relative humidity. The long term is deep frozen, -18 to -40. Garden nurseries are used to maintain wild species in both India and China, and greenhouses are used to maintain other difficult species such as many of the photoperiodic species. One thing about Uzbekistan, they represent the only collection that doesn't have any cold or cool storage available. And Brazil, their collection, they only have a long-term -20 storage system. And the Brazilian collection is actually bundled into all of the other plant collections in that country, so it's not a separate cotton collection. In terms of availability, all germplasm in the USDA collection is freely available to anyone with a legitimate request, and that goes outside of the US, that's internationally. Other germplasm collections require MTAs, and many of the respondents from the various collections said they're complex acquisition process outside of the country. And some of you probably know that firsthand. So the last part of the presentation today, outside of some nice pictures of some of these materials, some future concerns and needs that were voiced by many of the collections, exploration and exchange. The challenge here was the loss of native habitats and population. Of course, funding is required, a lot of funding actually, to maintain and long-term preserve these materials. And of course, international treaties, national MTAs, and political and legal constraints. But with challenges, of course, there are opportunities. And we see opportunities in collaborative multinational explorations, increased collection-to-collection exchange. Conservation and regeneration, of course, is a big concern, and the challenges here are rising energy and maintenance costs. Although the price of a barrel of oil is down today, I'd be willing to bet that it won't be in the near future. Who knows? Also, infrastructure development costs, especially for places like Uzbekistan that doesn't have any cold or cool storage, and tropical nurseries also offer their own challenges. But opportunities here, their collaborative resource and regeneration efforts maybe could be an opportunity. Planned critical germplasm redundancy across collections. Characterization and data collection, the challenge here is gathering a uniform data collection across collections. Agronomic and improvement data are lacking. Germplasm redundancy, of course, is a big issue. But the opportunities here, perhaps establish core collections and a core set of DNA markers. Many of the collections are already beginning this process, and I think this is going to be a big opportunity for the future. Also, the opportunity to establish uniform data guidelines, and also collaborative multinational field trials. There's an opportunity there, but I'm sure that there's a big challenge involved. Data storage and accessibility is also a challenge. We heard a nice talk about CottonDB, and hopefully we'll see more databases like that coming from each of these collections that are interlinked together so databases can easily talk together. So in the last series of slides, I just want to show you some pictures of some wild species. And again, I'm not going to attempt to pronounce all of these because I wouldn't do it justice. But these pictures, many of these pictures came from the Indians, and also some of the pictures came from the Uzbeks. So I'm just going to go through here. This represents D4 genome, another diploid species here. When we look at these pictures, it's amazing to see the enormous diversity. As a breeder, I wouldn't want to tackle that tree. And it's not because I'm just short. These next series of pictures came from the Uzbeks. And what's interesting, we heard some talks during this week where wild species have been used. One of the wild species that has been used many years ago is shown here on the left, your left hand of the slide. Enormous accomplishments. Gossypium longicalyx also was talked about this week. So with that, I want to say again, this was a multinational collaborative effort with the real idea to stimulate collaboration among different cotton scientists across the world, and to really develop a paper that really communicates how important these cotton germplasm resources are to everyone in the world. Thank you.
Do you have any questions for Todd? We got plenty of time.
Yes, sir.
In terms of the future, I think it's probably the International Genome Initiative Germplasm Group to settle on a uniform taxonomy. Because, say, for example, Gossypium fluorescens is a species that's grown by the Chinese, but Brixell puts that into your pseudo. Mexicana may be another one. Mexicana is also your pseudo. But anyway.
Thank you. I wish you would have attended our meeting.
Any more questions? Thank you, Todd. Well, before we go, I just would like to take one last chance to thank everyone who's participated in this program and all the hard work of the speakers and moderators. Without them and without just having people come to hear it, you know, this all wouldn't be possible. And I just appreciate the opportunity to help facilitate bringing this meeting to everyone in this group. With that, we will adjourn this conference and see you next year.